BulaNetwork.com, episode 115. Hey kids, greetings from the Yellow Studio. We're coming to you from North Central Texas. We call it the Metroplex, otherwise known as the DFW area. I don't know about where you're at, but here we can't decide if it's winter or spring. 79 degrees one day, in the 50s the next, 40s the next, back up to 70 again. Running the air conditioner, seriously, ran the air conditioners yesterday. And last night, had to have heat. Man, go figure. On the sporting news, now the Super Bowl, it's set, New York Giants, and your New England Patriots, for those of you up in the Northeast. Hey, today I want to talk with you about resource allocation. Resource allocation may or may not be what you think. We'll talk about it next. I don't know about you, but I do, on occasion, watch Shark Tank. Well, come on. I'm here in Dallas, and this is the home of the Dallas Mavericks, whose owner is Mark Cuban, and we all know Mark Cuban. He loves reality TV. He loves being on reality TV, and I'm going to tell you, I'm a fan. I'm a fan of Mark Cuban. And you would expect me to be, I guess, you know, a homer in that sense. I didn't always feel that way. I wasn't always a fan, you know, back when he had kind of the little Dutch boy haircut. And now I'm not fond of every act of behavior that we see displayed, but you know, to be fair, I've had acts of my own behavior I wasn't terribly proud of. So to look at somebody else's life and throw rocks, well, yeah. There is the glass house and all that kind of stuff. The man is smart. The man is bright. And yes, he's got tons of resources. But when you watch that show, one of the first questions that seems to be asked, and if you've not seen it, here's the premise. You've got people who are coming into the Shark Tank, which is these, I don't know, how many are there? Are there one, two, three, four? There's four or five of them. And these are people that, they aren't necessarily venture capitalists, but that's kind of the role they're serving. They're serving as VCs, as people who would make an investment. And so these people come into the Shark Tank and they pitch. They make some pitch about this idea they've got, this company they've got, and they are asking for a certain amount of money. And each of them, it's a specific amount of money that they're asking for in return for a certain percentage of equity. And from there, hey, all bets are off, and it's just full-blown negotiation. And in some cases, none of the sharks are interested at all in the idea, and in other cases, many of the sharks are interested, and so sometimes, you know, they get into these pretty fun-filled battles as they vie for the opportunity to participate with this entrepreneur who stands before them. They almost always ask this question at some point early on. So enter the Shark Tank person who has this seemingly great idea, or so they think so, and they want $60,000. And the question is, what are you going to do with it? What do you need the $60,000 for? And you better have an answer. If you don't have an answer, there will be blood in the water, and it will be your own, by the way. So A good question. It's a great question. You can read Forbes or Fortune or Business Week or Fast Company or Inc. or any number of business publications, physical or online, and you will countless see story after story after story after story of companies who were able to raise a certain amount of funding. And in some cases, it's an incredible amount of funding. We read stories of IPOs and just the vast amounts of capital that are now at the disposal of said company. And yes, sometimes we see those dollars just foolishly just get flushed. We hear about companies that will spend some of their resource. They will allocate big chunks of resources, and they will go buy or acquire another company. And a year will go down the pike, and another year, and perhaps another year. And then that company, they get sold off. And in some cases, they get sold off for nickels on the dollar. It is not uncommon for you to pick up any kind of a business publication and find that someone paid one amount of money for a company, and now a year, 2, 3 years later, they are selling that same company for a fraction of what they paid for it. And we think, man, what a waste. What a waste of resources. What a waste of money. Resource allocation. Now, if you work for a startup that has, you know, some big honking IPO, great, power to you. But, you know, most of us, that's not our world. We may sit around and we may dream about that, like people dream about winning any kind of a state lottery, but it's not the practical reality for most of us. Most of us, you know, we've got our jobs, we've got our careers, we've got our small business. Maybe we've got even a medium-sized business. Hey, maybe we've got a corner office in a big business. Well, okay, that's great and wonderful, but you know, you're in rarefied air if you do have the corner office in a big multinational company. So for the rest of us who live down here where, you know, mere mortals breathe regular smog-filled air, what about us? How does all this talk of resource allocation, how does it fit us? Well, I think there are some things that we can learn. There are certain observations that I think we can clearly make in addition to the ones that I've already made about a company's ability to springboard to the next level. And in some cases, it's not a level. In some cases, it's a stratosphere. I mean, you can look at the big companies that we all know, and many of us we may touch, or they may touch us every single day of our lives. Google comes to mind. Amazon comes to mind. Apple and iTunes comes to mind. Facebook comes to mind. Twitter. There are a variety of these kinds of companies that touch our lives every day, and they just seem to get bigger and bigger. And we've all heard the adage, and I'm older than the average bear, and I've heard it all of my life, so I know you've heard it all of your life. You know, the rich get richer. The big seem to get bigger. Now, we can't look at size and say, well, that means that they are impervious to any kind of calamity. They are impervious to weakness. They are impervious to failure. Oh, no, they're not. All you have to do is study the annals of business history, and you will find it littered with grave markers of companies who thought that they were too big to fail. No one's too big to fail. But the fact is, there are resources that are available to the Googles of the world, to the Microsofts of the world, to the Amazons of the world, to the Apples of the world. There is this war chest it could be manifested not only are resources just calculated in dollars and cents, but they are also calculated in other ways. They are calculated in brain power. I mean, do you suppose that the brain trust that is at the top of the heap at Amazon, do you suppose that those cats might be a little bit brighter than most of us? I mean, does anybody doubt that? No, I mean, these are smart people. Now, smart people can still make stupid decisions and do stupid things, but when you got a flock of smart people, well, they do tend to make pretty smart moves, don't they? And so the allocation of resources, as things grow, what we're seeing today, perhaps unlike we've ever seen it before because of the internet, we are seeing scope and scale unlike we have seen before. We are seeing an attraction of talent congregated at places that we've not seen before. Now, sometimes that talent gets, for whatever reason, they get bored, I suppose. I'm sure they get other things, but bored would be one of them. And so they leap, and they leap over into startups. And so we are now living in a world full of startups by some really bright people who have some really impressive resumes because they've worked at some of these big places, and they've got an idea, and they've got an idea that they'd like to develop that idea and see if it has legs. And even at a small level, now you have all of these startups clamoring, and what are they? Many of them are clamoring for VC money. They are clamoring for venture capitalist money. They want investors. They need investors. They want to get to the next level. They want to break out of this little bootstrap startup, and they want to be a real company. And they know that they need the resources to do that. What do they need the resources for? Well, some of them need it for technology infrastructure. Some of them need it because they need more brain power. They need to hire people. Some of them, depending on what business they are in, they may need it for inventory. They may need it for marketing and distribution costs. There are all kinds of reasons that people need money, money that could be well spent. And the better that they are able to pinpoint what they need that money for, where will that money go, and why is it going to go there? And now we are into this grandiose conversation of resource allocation. Let's look at our own lives. Let's just look at our own personal lives. Let's start there. We'll try to expand this out a little bit as we wind up and wind down. Let's start with our own. Well, does anybody have a checkbook anymore? No, but okay, we'll use the checkbook as a metaphor for our own personal finances. So we start with ourselves and our own personal checkbook. Now, most of us do not have an unlimited amount. Most of us have some finite amount. And if we were to look on a checkbook register, a checkbook balance, which nobody does anymore, but if we looked at that, there would be a number. And that number would represent, that's the most that we have. We have no more. Well, we've got some in this account and that account, but okay, take the total of all those things, and that still comes to a number. Now, you may be living a life where your resource allocation, it's spoken for before you ever even have the resources. The world is full of people who are living paycheck to paycheck, and for them, resource allocation is we are just struggling to get the resources to allocate because it's already predetermined. We owe this much in a house payment. Our utility bill is going to be this much. Our phone bill is going to be this much. Cable, satellite, cell phone, all the other stuff that we have. And all of those, all of the dollars, all of the resources that we have coming to us this month, they are all fully allocated before the month ever begins. I mean, here we are, we're getting to the end of January, and there are many of you, February's allocation, it's done. It's in the books. You know what you have to have, and you may be just getting by the skin of your teeth. Others of you may be, you may have multiples left over at the end of every month. And you may have some choices where you allocate. Now, we all have choices. Do we have to have cell phones? No. Do we have to have satellite television? No. We have to have a roof over our head. We have to have food to eat. We have to have, hopefully, some safe place to spend each night. But I know people, and you may be one of them. I know people who, you know, a hot water heater could pop a leak, and all of a sudden, you know, here's an added couple of $100 expense, and it's, the world is turned upside down. I know what that's like. I've been there. I think many of us, maybe even most of us, have been there, and some are still there. Resource allocation is, how can we make a dollar go further? How can we stretch this dollar? We have so much money to spend. We go to the grocery store. We have so many mouths to feed. And now there's tremendous creativity and ingenuity that has to be implemented so that we can make every dollar go as far as we possibly can, because we've got four people in the household that have to eat today and tomorrow and hopefully the day after tomorrow. Yeah, that's resource allocation. Some of the most creative people that I know are some of the poorest people, because ingenuity has got to be a way of life, because they don't have what many of us call margin. They don't have margin in their lives. They don't have financial margin in their life. They are living on the edge. And certainly we have seen since 2007 in particular, we have seen all over the globe, we have seen this economic crunch, crash. We have seen it take its toll. Story after story after story of people who they did not have margin in their lives financially. Okay, sure. Sometimes you can throw rocks and you can blame them, perhaps, and other times people just, bad things happen to good people. I was listening to a Freakonomics podcast while I was working out the other day. And if you don't subscribe to that, man, you really should. I mean, it's just a pretty terrific podcast. I've been a longtime fan of, you know, since that first book came out, and perhaps you have too. But this particular one was about doctors washing their hands and people having a financial IQ. And there was a study that was cited, and they had on their podcast, they had on the person who had done this research, and she had discovered, and they had done this research with people over the age of 50. In fact, this is what sparked the idea for today's show. People over the age of 50. Okay, well, I'm 54, so I can relate. And they asked them three pretty basic questions. And a huge percentage of these people could not correctly answer these questions. And these questions were fairly simple. I remember the first one was something along the lines of, if you had $100 and you were able to grow that $100 by 2% each year, at the end of 5 years, how much money would you have? Would you have less than $100? Would you have exactly $100 or $102? Would you have exactly $102, or would you have more than $102? And of course, the answer is you'd have more. You'd have more than $102 if your money grew by 2% every year for five consecutive years, and you started with $100. I mean, it's kind of hard to get your head wrapped around the fact that an awful lot of people, I forgot what their percentage was. Go back and listen to that podcast. I'll put a link in the show notes. Man alive, but yeah, I'm thinking to myself as I'm sitting here working out, right? And I've got this in my earbuds and I'm thinking to myself, you know, I'm not a financial brainiac by a long shot, but boy, I'm ahead of the curve. I mean, I get that. And the other questions were equally simple. Well, the researchers were stunned. I mean, they were absolutely stunned. They did not expect to see the level of financial ignorance that they did. And we're not talking that people are just stupid. It's just, it's beyond some people. And the fact that this was a group over 50 is what really got me. And I think that's what got the researchers, is because these are people who have lived their lives. And you would think just by virtue of living their life, I mean, by getting to the age of 50, they've likely purchased cars. They've likely purchased houses. They've entered into a number of financial transactions that you would look at someone who's the age of 20 and say, well, okay, you know, certainly, you know, there's a number of 20-year-olds that have never bought a car before, never bought a house before. But you wouldn't think that'd be the case with people at 50. You would think that they would be a bit more experienced about such things in life. And it proved the point. Financial, not only just financial responsibility, but financial knowledge is not nearly as widespread as we might think. And this whole notion of resource allocation when it comes to our own personal finances, I mean, can there be any doubt that some people, they just don't know how? And yet I look at stories and I see people here living in a big city. You often see people out panhandling at intersections, homeless people that live, well, some do. I mean, there's been some research done and they've shown that there's some people that make a lot of money at those corners, and it's completely contrived. I remember a story here locally, you know, and it hadn't crossed my mind that somebody would be living in a suburban area, and they would get in a car and they would go park somewhere and they would look disheveled and they would walk to some intersection and panhandle and behaving as though they're homeless. And then, you know, they, after a day at the intersection and making hundreds, if not thousands of dollars, get back and, you know, walk, get back in their Denali and go back to their suburban house. I'm like, who does that? Well, evidently there are people that do that. Now, I don't think that's the majority of those people, but, you know, I look at people that forget being down and out on their luck. I mean, people that may be suffering from some sort of mental illness, people that may be suffering substance abuse, people that are homeless, and yet year after year, here they are, and they survive. You can't tell me that the human spirit isn't full of creativity and ingenuity. I mean, people who just, they figure out a way. Whatever their resources are, whether their resources are things that they push around in a shopping cart, and they're homeless, and they take all their possessions with them all day long, and they figure these resources out. I remember seeing a story, a documentary. And if you looked at the man, you would have never guessed that he was homeless, lived in a cardboard box on the streets of New York City. And he would place that cardboard box over one of the sidewalk, you know, vents where heat would come up so he could survive in the winter. He would fold up his cardboard box and he would place it strategically somewhere where he could hide it. Kept his clothes clean. Would use public restrooms and whatnot. I'm pretty crafty. I rather suspect your resources are vastly greater than his, but what resources he had, he was using them. He was allocating them wisely. So when it comes to our personal finance, you know, we can allocate our resources wisely. We can allocate our resources in, well, we could lump them in some categories, I suppose, in necessities. We could put them in things that, well, they might improve us or those that we love. I'm thinking of little kids in school, and maybe they need some school supplies. We could go blow $5 or $10, or we could invest that $5 or $10 in our child and whatever things they might need in the classroom. That's a resource, and that's an allocation of a resource. Now, you might not like that allocation, but Could anybody argue, if you stop and ponder it, that that would be a smart allocation of family resources, that a family might be better off, they might be better off disconnecting cable television or satellite television so that they can give their child a leg up? Yeah. You and I both know an awful lot of families would not make such a sacrifice. They'd be like, they're going to throw rocks at the school and think, well, what in the world? How come they've got this list and you need to, you telling me that you've got to have crayons and you've got to have scissors and you. At the beginning of every school year, you hear it. You just hear people moan and groan and complain. And you could drive outside the biggest hovel in Dallas-Fort Worth, and I guarantee you what you will see, more likely than not, you'll see a satellite dish. You'll see a mini dish on the roof. Couldn't possibly give Junior $10 for this, you know, for this semester or perhaps even this entire school year. No, but we can spend $60 on DirecTV. Allocation of resource. Now let's expand it beyond that and say, well, okay, we've got our career, or we've got a small business. Well, there's two real components to return on investment that kind of tickle your brain cells with, and they're pretty simple. Time and money. Time and money. Can we allocate our resources so that we can save time? Can we allocate our resources so we can save money? Can we allocate our resources so we can save time and money? Now you're talking. I mean, you know, if we can do the double whammy, kill two birds with one stone and all that, that's even more terrific. Allocation of resources could be, is there some training? Is there some education? Is there something that you could do to feed your brain? Now, an awful lot of things are just a complete, utter waste of time. But I know people, for instance, who have paid good money for test preparation, for instance, some particular type of certification that they need. Well, I can even go you one better. I'm thinking of a friend who's graduated from law school and has paid a certain amount of money, a decent amount of money, for a bar preparation, which is rather commonplace. And there are all kinds of certifications that people have. They get certifications for a variety of different kind of computer things, for different kinds of professional services kinds of things. And some of these may cost thousands of dollars. Well, are those worth it? It's an allocation of a resource, in this case, money and time. Time that you'll have to spend studying, time that you'll have to spend devoted to learning this stuff. Well, yeah, it can be. I've got two kids, and each of them are married, and so I have two kids-in-laws. So I've got four young people that are pretty important in my life. All four of these young people have advanced degrees. They all have a master's degree in whatever it is that they studied. Worthwhile? For them, it was. I'm not saying it is for everybody, but there was an allocation of resources. It took time and it took money to get those advanced degrees. Worthwhile? Yes, for them. Worthwhile for everybody? Had a conversation not long ago with somebody that had two advanced degrees. And they're just trying to find meaningful work. No, I mean, they aren't even close to sniffing at being able to pay off their student loans. So for them right now, doesn't appear to be worth it. And they're really questioning, you know, is it worth it? So what is all this about anyway? I mean, so what are we supposed to do with this? Well, I really want to leave you with a couple of things, none of the least of which, and I've harped about this because at 54, I've learned some things. I haven't learned an awful lot of things, but I've learned this much. Our lives are a limited, finite resource. And how we allocate our lives is hugely important. And we can allocate our lives personally and professionally however we choose to. But we've got to look at the return. We've kind of got to be a little bit like the guys in Shark Tank, don't we? And we kind of have to say, what do you need that for? You want to spend your time doing this? You want to spend your money doing that? Why do you need to do that? Because I don't know about you, but in my life, I catch myself too many times. I catch myself in mindless things. I'd love to tell you that I'm smarter than that, but I'm not. I'd love to tell you that I'm so far past, you know, frivolity and wasting time and wasting money, but I'm not. And I don't know that any of us are. I think we are all susceptible to wasting time, and we're all susceptible to wasting money. And it takes a real conscious effort on our part to really protect ourselves and understand that not only our life, but everything that encompasses our life, our possessions, our money, our bank accounts, it's all a resource. And how we choose to spend that is entirely up to us. And we can do it foolishly, like a company that goes and acquires another company only to run the value of that company down, down, down. And then some years later, we're selling it off at a fraction of what we invested. We've got no return on it. In fact, not only did it cost us money, it cost us momentum. It cost us time. Think of the people involved in an acquisition where someone comes out and maybe they spend $100 million buying a company that 2 years later they sell for 10. It wasn't just the $90 million lost. It was the countless people involved, and it was the countless careers on the line, and it was all the momentum that they could have been funneling in some other direction. I mean, couldn't that $100 million have been better spent? Certainly. Well, we could take $100 and say the same thing. It's all just a matter of scale. What we do with our time, what we do with our money, what we do with any resource that we've got, it matters. And the thing is, I guess it really boils down for me, in real simple terms, because I'm a kind of a simple guy, it comes down to, is it an investment or is it an expense? Some expenses, maybe they could be deemed as somewhat of an investment. Maybe you save your money. A family member has a birthday and you decide you're all going to go out and you're going to do it as cheaply as you can. And yeah, you're just going to go out and you're going to have a pizza party, let's say. And you've saved up. Pizza party's done. Birthday party's over. Investment or an expense? I don't know. Come on. You know, I kind of have to view such things as maybe a little bit of both. An investment in the sense that there was a family experience. Oh, is everybody going to remember it forever? No, not necessarily. But then there are other things that, you know, we're going to invest in our kids. You can invest in your kids' education. Are you going to invest in helping your child put the best foot forward? Are you going to make an investment in yourself? Are you going to spend some time thinking about how you spend your time? Are you going to try to waste less time, waste less money, be less impulsive? All of those are very worthwhile things, very worthwhile pursuits. We would all do ourselves proud to probably give them more consideration than we already do. And that's kind of my hope. That's my goal. That's my goal for myself. I want to be less wasteful. Allocation of resources, I guess for me, means that we view these things as valuable as they are, that we not diminish them, that we not think that there's just a world of plenty, that there's more where that came from. And while there may be, there may not be. Our lives are fastly moving right along down the line. I'm 54. I can remember when I couldn't have fathomed being 40. 30, much less 50, and here I am. pushing at 55. My name is Randy Cantrell. The website is BulaNetwork.com. I would love it if you would subscribe to the podcast. You can do that over at iTunes. And you know what more I would love? I would love it if you'd leave me a great review over there. If you take issue with me, do that at Twitter. Don't blast me at iTunes. Well, you can. I can't stop you. I'd love for you to leave me some good feedback over there. I'm coming to you, as always, from the Yellow Studio.